side of the tape, we're going to continue our discussion of the Chronicle.
Joe Feldman asked that I become what would be called, I guess, the publisher or the publisher's representative of the Chronicle, suggesting then that I would have power over both Gollum and Bloom. But I rejected that notion for what I think are obvious reasons. It would have been an extraordinarily difficult task, and I'm not sure it would have been acceptable to the whole board, although I guess Joe could have achieved it that he wanted. But anyway, we didn't pursue it very much. That wasn't a reasonable solution. The Chronicle, from the beginning, had a lot of interesting issues to resolve, the most important issue being how to project a new image for an American Jewish paper in Pittsburgh, and also how to achieve decent income. And we did do rather quickly a survey of our readership to underpin a marketing or advertising or sales program to potential advertisers. And we began to move away from business of those very large special New Year's issues that both of you may or may not remember.
I remember.
Characteristic of the old Criterion and Outlook. And nevertheless, in our first couple of years, it was very hard. Then, I forget the exact occasion, but we did employ Al Zecker as advertising salesman and later advertising manager, and Al was very helpful. Interestingly enough, just as an aside, I participated for a while, for several years as a matter of fact, in some of the attempts to sell advertising. The biggest and most unsuccessful undertaking that went on for quite a few years was an attempt to sell advertising to the department stores, which have a policy of not advertising in ethnic newspapers. And on two occasions, both in which I was involved with Al Zecker, we thought we had Joseph Horne sold, and both times the advertising manager of Horne, so we understood at least, who had agreed to buy, was overruled by the top management on the grounds that they would not change their policy. Just as an aside, by the way, just to put it in the record, something I'm in a way sort of proud of, I was always very interested in all of this, and very anxious to attempt to put together a national Jewish newspaper supplement in which other, at least community-owned newspapers and eventually privately-owned newspapers could participate. By this time, Cleveland had put together a community newspaper, St. Louis had put together a community newspaper. They consulted with us, with me and others, by the way, before they did it. Anyway, and I finally, and it was I to a very large extent, did manage to put out a one copy of a national supplement. It was a literary supplement in which we sold some advertising to book publishers, including, I think, Doubleday and the History Book of the Month Club and so forth. The editor of the Jewish Telegraphic Agency acted as editor of it, and I thought it was a pretty good issue. We had four, I think it was, newspapers that participated. It was a very hard thing to do. Joe Feldman didn't like it because I was taking Al Zecker particularly away from his duties at the Chronicle. The head of the Jewish Telegraphic Agency didn't like it because we were taking away the editor of the Jewish Telegraph. But I was very determined, and I got the consent of I went to Cleveland, so forth, and got the consent to Cleveland, etc. The only trouble was that I selected books to be the subject of the supplement. We put out a literary supplement. and there was a lot of coupons in it. And I learned that people very often don't pay much attention to coupons. Anyway, it was not really a success financially, and we didn't pursue it. Over the years since then, there's been a lot of proliferation, and, of course, of writing, etc., in on Jewish affairs, etc., although there still is no national weekly, I'll say for that matter. I wasn't thinking of a weekly initially, a supplement. It was a very interesting venture, and one in which I got a lot of satisfaction out of. Going back to the Chronicle, Al Zecker did help significantly in developing advertising income, and although he didn't help particularly in assuaging or diminishing the hostility between Bloom and Gollum. Whether the strain of what happened, I mean of the situation, contributed to Al Gollum's death or not, I don't really know. But anyway, after about 5 years, I don't remember the date anymore, Al Gollum, you know, it's a funny thing. I don't remember anymore whether it was a heart attack or a stroke. I think it was a stroke. Funny. I should remember that. Anyway, finally and ultimately died.
Was he a young man at the time?
No.
Middle-aged, old?
Al was, I think, already in his 60s, which is today relatively young. But there was no question that in terms of the internal intestinal fiber, Al was the tougher of the two.
They were both Al. Which Al?
Al, I'm sorry, Al Bloom.
Okay.
Al Bloom was very tough internally. Amazing. I don't want to characterize him much further. The issue then came up as to what the professional structure of the Chronicle would be. It was sort of taken for granted initially that Al Bloom would become the, if not the publisher, at least the principal in the Chronicle. And I don't mind putting in the record the fact that I disliked that. I did not think that Al Bloom and was developing the newspaper in a way that in the long run would be most constructive for the Jewish community, or most constructive for at least, let's put it this way, the Jewish Chronicle. I'll come back to that in one moment. But I went to Joe Feldman and I suggested to Joe that consideration ought to be given to making Al Zecker business manager and an equal, therefore, with Al Bloom. And although I didn't like, as no one likes, the idea of an institution being operated by two equals, I thought in this case the benefits would outweigh the disadvantages. And I was persuasive, and Joe consulted with a couple other people, Beck Kaplan, who I think, by the way, might have been president at that time already, now that I think about it, probably was. And anyway, the result was that the board, at the recommendation either of Joe or Beck, I don't remember which one, agreed that the two should be equals. And Al Zecker became business manager, Al Bloom became editor. And on the whole, the two of them over the years maintained an uneasy balance. It was a much better situation than the one that existed between Al Gollum and Al Bloom, because Al Zecker, at least, devoted himself to a certain kind of adjustment to Al Bloom, and the paper was able to operate much more smoothly.
You said Beck Kaplan was president. President of what?
I'm going to go. Joe Feldman had been the first president, but very properly, of course, it was agreed that there would be a rotation of both presidents and board members. Although I think, if I remember rightly, it's a 6-year business as far as the board members are concerned in the Chronicle, but 3 years for the president. Joe Feldman may or may not have been more president for more than 3 years, because the first president, sometimes there are some special circumstances. But Joe was succeeded by Bernard Kaplan, who was called Beck Kaplan, who was very active in Federation. In fact, he was the first chairman of our Social Planning and Budgeting Committee, and someone, therefore, with whom I worked very closely, if we ever talk about the operations of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee. He was the first chairman of the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee for the United Jewish Federation when the Federation was organized. Although Bob Cummins preceded him a little bit. Bernard also was a very skillful and very strong person, a very good president in many ways. The next president was Irving Isaacs. There were some interesting things with the Bernard Kaplan and questions of issues and so forth, but I think I'll just skip them. With one exception, it was during, I think, Beck or Bernard Kaplan's presidency that the issue came up about carrying ads for non-kosher meats. The issue came up from the beginning. It was pretty much agreed we wouldn't carry ads for meats, but it wasn't laid on the table so much. But the issue came up when the Chronicle was able to become an advertiser, or not an advertiser, was able to get advertising from a supplement of the, must have been the Monroeville Mall. And in that supplement would be ads by grocery stores, which would be advertising ham and so forth. And it was a very difficult issue. The board agreed that somehow or other we ought not to carry ads for ham and pork. Beck Kaplan making the point that there's something, and that's true by the way, something special in the Jewish religion against that. That some things like shrimp and so forth you didn't feel so strongly about, but pork and ham has a particularly strong connotation. And the Chronicle did not carry ads for years. Therefore, the Chronicle did not carry, this I had a lot to do with, did not carry for years ads from cigarette companies. I had very strong feelings about this and was able to be, I was really very influential at the Chronicle board. Not so much at the open board meetings, although I spoke quite freely at the open board meetings too, but also in my almost daily interaction with the president and other people at the board.
Did you have to be as involved, Saul, after Al Golem's death, when things seemed to be balanced a little bit?
For a while, for a long time. Eventually I began to drift away. In recent years, I no longer had much contact with him. But in the early years, probably for 10 years, I'll tell you as a matter of fact when it began to change. But on the cigarette ad, just as a note, the Chronicle finally went back to carrying the cigarette ads a couple years ago. I was sorry to see it. Although it did cost the Chronicle a lot of income. Anyway, Irving Isaacs was the next president of the Chronicle after Vernon Kaplan. He had been very active in the Chronicle from the very beginning. Chronicle's board, at the very beginning, consisted of individuals who attempted to represent various geographic and other interests and elements in the Jewish community. Irv came from South Hills. He was in public relations for his father-in-law's former business, Pennsylvania Transformer Company, and had a lot of ideas, a lot of energy, and was extremely interested in the Chronicle. And during that period, the Chronicle did grow, although he and Bloom did not get along at all well. Zecker and Isaac got along quite well because Zecker was, on the whole, responsive to Isaacs. Irv had an awful lot of ideas on the editorial side, some of which were very difficult to carry out because of the limited resources of the Chronicle, some which could have been carried out, but Al Bloom either was not willing or not able to carry them out, and their relationship was not very good. was an incident which does affect the Chronicle, which I'll now talk about, and we'll see whether either of you are present at the event. It's an extraordinary event, which of course many people still remember. But some of what I'm talking about now, very, very few, if any, would remember, or no, would know, rather. Back in 1971 or 72, I don't remember which, now, Art Bedell was chairman, campaign chairman of the Jewish Federation, and it was decided to have a campaign event at Carnegie Music Hall, at which a televised speech by Golda Meir was going to be presented. So the crowd assembled, and it was a relatively big crowd, pretty well filled the Carnegie Music Hall, and the crowd sat and waited for Golda Meir to come and her image to be projected, her statement to be made. Nothing was taking place on the stage at the time. Now this was a time, that's from 1971, let's say, when the ferment among the young of the 60s was still relatively strong. And a young boy, whose first name now does escape me, I'm not sure I ever really knew it too well, but it was Al Smolliver's son, who was dressed pretty roughly at the time, and who represented one of the fringe elements in the Jewish community at the time. He was very young, I don't know if he was more than 19. Came to Soroka, who was there as campaign director, as Federation executive, and asked for consent or permission to go up on the stage and make an announcement. He wanted to make an announcement about a forthcoming meeting or something. And Art and Jerry consulted about this. They were fearful that Smolliver boy was going to make some sort of firebrand statement about something that they could not predict, and that it would be very, very disturbing to the whole audience. So they refused him consent. And there was actually a rather, I was sitting up in the second balcony, by the way, of the Carnegie Music Hall, and I actually looked for a moment to see them arguing downstairs, and all of a sudden, the young boy, were you there, Sylvia?
No, I was not there. I just heard about it afterwards.
Yeah. Anyway, the young boy suddenly broke away, raced up onto the platform, and began to make a speech. All of a sudden, from the side of the stage, an unknown individual darted out, took out a mace gun, and sprayed the boy with the mace. And the boy hit the floor instantly, as if he'd been poleaxed. And then the man darted away and disappeared. And to this day, by the way, I don't really know who he was. Told Al Zucker thought he knew who he was, that he'd come in somewhere from out of the community, Erie or Meadville or someplace like that, saw that this was happening, thought that the boy was some sort of wild radical doing something terribly destructive, and intervened personally without, you know, checking with anyone. Anyway, there was this boy stretched out on the platform, and 1,500 Federation supporters at a campaign meeting seeing this and not having the slightest idea what was going on, except very quickly the word went around that this boy had been maced on the instructions, obviously, because that's what everyone would leak to. Had been maced on the instructions of the authorities, which would mean Art Bedell and Jerry Soroka. I got to admit that I sat there stunned myself for a couple of minutes upstairs in the second balcony. Then I came downstairs, although there wasn't much we could do. I think it was Al Zucker, actually, because he knew somebody who went who called the radio station, the television station rather, which happened to be there, I think, and asked them not to put this on, which they didn't, by the way, if I remember rightly. But there was a tremendous stir in the community. It was right around this time, as a matter of fact, that there had been a lot of, what word shall I use, disaffection with the Federation, and particularly with Jerry Stroker, on the grounds that the Federation was becoming cliquish and Concordia, well, I'm sure Sylvia will remember this, Concordia already ended, and so forth. After the incident, I remember very vividly talking to Al Bloom about the question of how the Chronicle should handle this. You know, I don't remember at this moment, but I'm sure the Chronicle wrote some sort of story, but I do remember vividly saying to Bloom, you're going to get letters on this, and you better be very, very careful, and I think what you ought to do is carry the letters for, whether it was 1 week or 2 weeks, period, and don't let it become a long drawn out controversy, or there's going to be a very, very inflammatory business, because there's a lot of elements in the community and so forth. Sure enough, letters came in, and either in the second or third week, I forget which it was, a letter came, it was, I think, a response letter or something, from, I think, the Swallower boy himself to Al Bloom. And Al Bloom got ready to print it. Meantime, Art Fidel, who has a relatively thin skin and who is not a public figure to speak with and had no need to have a thick skin, was just literally crushed by this whole affair. It literally was destroying him. And when he found out that another letter, in addition to some others, was about to be printed, it really horrified him. Of course, he was furious with Al Bloom. And I remember very vividly being in the office. Matter of fact, it was in the morning, very close to publication time, morning in which Art Fidel had been in the office and had been talking with great vehemence about the whole incident, and then getting a call from Al Rogow. I'll make this comment. It might indicate to you my role in the Chronicle that Al Rogow, who, by the way, is Art Fidel's business partner, in case either of you don't know it, getting a call from Al Rogow saying to me, Saul, for God's sakes, please have the Chronicle stop printing any more letters because you're literally destroying Art Fidel as a person. I was very close to Irv Isaacs, very close to him. So I called Irv Isaacs then. I said to Al Rogow, I'll see what I can do. I called Irv Isaacs and I said to her, we have this letter, this call from Al Rogow, and I do think that it's possible that the Chronicle is maybe extending this beyond what is necessary, although that's debatable. But I want you to do this much at least. Would you please, as president, call Al Bloom and instruct Al Bloom not print any more letters until a meeting either of the editorial committee or of the board, I forget which it was now, could take place and review the situation and see whether any further letters should be written or should be printed, any statements should be made, so forth. And Irv said, if this is what you want, yes, I'll do that. He called Al Bloom and gave him that instruction. And then there was a meeting of the, I think it was an editorial committee, at which I was present. I don't know if anybody else from the Federation technically was present or not, but I was there. And I think it was agreed, if I remember rightly, that the issue or controversy should cease being handled, at least insofar as letters were concerned. And that was the end of that particular controversy and that particular incident. On that particular incident, by the way, just as an aside, I think Sidoff was probably president of the women's division at the time. And after the incident, the same night, I saw Cy, and she, of course, was horrified and didn't know the circumstances. Anyway, she said to me, she thought it would be very nice if someone from the Federation went to the small of her house and expressed concern, asked about the boy and so forth, because up to that point, none of that had happened. And I said, yes, I agree with that, but I would do that. And so Tibby and I did go to the small of her house. I wasn't sure whether Al and his wife, who's now dead, would let us in the front door or not. But we did go to the house, and I said to Al that I wasn't exactly official there, but I thought it both, and I said for myself, certainly, and Tibby, and then on behalf of the Federation, even though unofficially, we wanted to express regrets, et cetera, et cetera. But that was sort of one of the hype. There was a, for a while, right around that time, as I indicated earlier, although this doesn't really have to do with the Chronicle, but I'll interject it anyway. As I said, some disaffection within the community about the Federation. There was a group, some of them, Big Cavalier, I think, was one. I think Carol Bigler was part of it, I think. Shola might have been, Shola Kome. Cyril Weck certainly was. Cyril, who everybody knows is a highly controversial figure, somewhere along the line, I think it was not too far from this point, got involved in all this, and he got very upset with Soroker, and he finally wrote a letter to Soroker, which Soroker showed to quite a few people, including me, in which, among other things, I think around this time, maybe a little bit later. Anyway, in which he said, among other things, that I, Cyril Weck, that is, am a man of considerable energy, considerable time, and something else, a third thing. He said, and I'm going to devote all my time and all my energy and all my whatever it is, to sing to it that you leave this city. He put that in writing in a letter.
Now, who was it he wanted to leave the city?
The Roker.
Did the program ever go on that night?
Yes. Yes. The program went on.
Must have been a very late evening.
No. The incident didn't take that long.
Al Smoliver's son has now made Aliyah and writes for the Jerusalem Post and Moment Magazine as Ilan Chaim.
I know. Well, he was, you know, just one of the... The thing was, there were two parts to it, really. Number one, the question of whether he should or should not have been allowed to speak is a highly debatable one. It was debatable then, it's debatable today. The business of allowing someone who was not on an agenda to speak is a very difficult issue. And some of the outstanding liberals in the community at the time were very sympathetic to the notion of the refusal, saying that when you have an agenda, you just can't have it disrupted. But whatever the merits of the refusal might have been, the extraordinary circumstance was the intervention of this complete unknown. Cyril Weck in the Chronicle leads me to one other. He was a member of the board of the Chronicle eventually. I don't know if he came too often. By this time, I wasn't too active in the Chronicle. I don't know whether Cyril showed up very often. I don't think so. But as I said before, the Chronicle, I think, has a six-year term. And he had been elected the first 3 years. And then the renomination question came up. There was a meeting of the nominating committee at which I happened to be present, now that I think about it. And Cyril was renominated. But the day after the meeting, I think it was, I got a call from Cyril Weck, in which Cyril said that he understood that there had been Federation objections to his being renominated to the Chronicle, and that he was very upset and very angry about it. And I said to him, I said, Cyril, I happen to know that that's not true, but I'm not going to make an issue of it on that basis. Instead, I'm going to tell you a story. This is a true story. I said, some time ago, a friend of mine called me up and said, Saul, I'm very disturbed. I said, oh, what's the matter? He said, Saul, I've been told that you were quoted as saying that I'm a very poor contributor to the Federation, and I resent that. I said, look, so-and-so, I really make it a practice not to qualify, so to speak, or to be judgmental, is a better way to put it, except in the course of my job internally sometimes. But publicly, I make it a practice not to be judgmental about the giving of individuals. But I'm not going to argue with you as to whether I did or I did not make such a statement. Instead, I'm going to quote a proverb, if you want to call it that, to you. And the proverb says that the